Welcome to Hope for the Caregiver here on American Family Radio. This is Peter Rosenberger. Glad to be with you today. Hope you are doing well. Thank you for joining me on this excursion to all things caregiver related. I am your host on this particular tour guide. Keep your hands and your feet in at all times along the ride. And you must be this tall in order to ride the dog. No, I'm glad to be with you. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. Well, what a week. What a week this is. And this is my first procedure as they treat this cancer that I have. And they say it's 100% treatable. We're going to get through this. They said, look, we got this. Actually, it's 98%. They said, we don't normally say this to most men that come in here, but we feel comfortable saying that you've got a 98% chance this stuff ain't coming back. We're going to take care of it. We're going to get rid of it for you. And I'm like, well, that is just delightful. And doctors don't usually give 100% unless you're like pregnant or dead. You know, those are 100%ers, but everything else is kind of in that gray area. Sometimes that gray area is charcoal. In my case, though, they felt like we got it early, which, by the way, that's for you, okay, as caregivers. That's the lesson here. Early detection works. So I'm just encouraging you, if you haven't had a regular physical, if you haven't gotten a colonoscopy, if you haven't got a mammogram, if you haven't got your PSA checked, and, you know, this is the time. I mean, let's not delay this. As a caregiver, we're notorious for putting, you know, our own health on hold. Well, there's no math in that. So let's go do it. And if you're not a caregiver, you're listening to this program, you're a pastor, you're an elder, you're a deacon at the church, you've some type of ministry, some type of leadership at your church, and you know of somebody who is, ask them, have you been to your doctor regularly or lately to get, you know, how are things going with you physically, medically? And they say, well, I can't get away. Now you have an opportunity on how to serve a caregiver. We'll sit with your loved one. We'll help you with that. We'll make sure you get their transportation back and forth. I got a buddy of mine who did that for me, and I can drive for a lot of the radiation, but I can't drive for the initial setup procedure they had to do, and I couldn't drive for the biopsy and that kind of stuff. They don't want me to drive, and it's an hour and a half anyway. And then my son works in Bozeman, so he just gives me a ride home at the end of the day. We're all good, and I had to schedule the appointment. But that's something you could do for somebody in your church, in your community. Let them know. But you have to ask them, because chances are they're not going to say anything. But if you ask them and say, look, have you gotten a physical lately? Are you okay physically? Can we sit with them while you go do this? You know, somebody needs a mammogram. Somebody needs this. Somebody needs that. You know, let's do that. Let's help people do it. It was kind of funny. I was scheduling this thing, and the lady on the phone said, okay, the procedures start at 5:30 in the morning, but we're going to need you to be here an hour and a half early. Now, we don't know where you're going to be on the schedule. We'll call you the day before. And I said, ma'am, I live an hour and a half away. That means I'd have to leave here at 2:30 to be there at 4 in the morning. And for a procedure starts at 5:30. And I've got a severely disabled wife, and I have a little bit of challenge here with this, and I can't just move on a dime like this. She said, well, we've got a lot of people like you. And I said, no, you don't. I'm sorry. I pulled that card and I didn't care. And she said, well, I can't promise what day, what, you know, there are a lot of people trying to come from out of town, this and this. I said, I understand. But if you could make a note that I would prefer not to be scheduled first in the morning and to get it, give me an idea of, you know, when you could do that, maybe in the late morning, early afternoon, I'll work around with your schedule. But I have to arrange coverage, and I can do that during the day, and I can't move on a dime. And she just kept pushing back on me. And finally, I said, I tell you what, I got an idea. Why don't we switch places? Why don't I tell you that I'm doing the best I can, and you come up with a solution? How about that? And she didn't think that was nearly as funny as I did. I don't know what to say about that. And then I got a medical assistant that called me. Okay, now I'm going to do a video conference with the anesthesia group. Okay. You know how you do pre-anesthesia video, conferences where they do blood work and then go over all the stuff. Well, I did my blood work here at our local community hospital, and then they can get the information there and we're all good. And so I had that. And so now it's just a consult with the anesthesiologist, and it's going to be a video conference. And the medical assistant said, now you need to, what medications you take? And I told her, I only take one. And it's for distemper. No, I'm just kidding. But they said, okay, you need to stop that the day before. And I said, no, I don't. She said, well, yeah, you do. And I said, no, you don't stop a medication the day before you have a video conference. I said, I have that on very good authority that you don't have to. And she wanted to argue with me to the point where you have to talk to the nurse about that. And I said, no, I don't. I know better. And I've done this before. You don't stop your medication before you have a phone call with somebody or a video call. And she could not get that through her brain. And I ended up telling that to the anesthesiologist because there are some people she's going to tell that to, and they're going to stop their medication before the video conference. And I thought, oh, mercy. Life is challenging, isn't it? And so anyway, that's what's going on with me. We're going to get it taken care of. I'm hoping that we're going to have this thing wrapped up by the first week of July. I'm going to go through intense radiation. There's a path they do where it's a little bit more intense. They said, now you're going to be a little bit more tired. And I said, I've been tired since 1986. You know, there are levels of tired that I don't know about yet. They didn't quite understand that, but that's okay. As a caregiver, you understand that, don't you? And they said, but we'll manage, we'll watch all these things, but we think you're going to be, you know, okay. A buddy of mine asked me, he said, are you going to lose your hair? He said, because if you are, I'm going to laugh at you for 2 weeks. My lifelong best friend. And he's bald. And I said, no, I'm not losing my hair, but I will be a little bit tired, and we'll get this thing done. And I'm grateful that I have options because we caught this early. I will tell you this. All right, look, don't tell anybody what I'm about to tell you. Okay. Y'all don't say nothing. And I mean this, this is just twixt us, but I really don't like needles. And I feel bad about this because Gracie is so tough. Her life is, there's been nothing but needles in her life since she was 17. I've watched them come up to the house to draw blood from her. The doc sent the team up here to do that. And she was taking a nap and never even woke up while they drew blood from her. I mean, she just, you know, it doesn't even faze her. I mean, the stuff they do to her. Well, they go in there with me. And okay, all right, I get the IVs and all that kind of stuff. But they want to do it in my hands. And I say, nay, nay. I mean, I need my hands for work, and I'm a pianist, and I just got a thing about my hands. I mean, I just get a little queasy about it, and I don't like them digging around in my hands. And I sit there and have to just kind of squint, look away. I mean, don't tell Gracie, because I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed because she is so tough, and I am not. I hate needles, and I cannot lie. And I just, you know, but I got to do it. It's just got to be done. I've got to The procedure to put the markers in, and then I have to get a CT scan where they have to do another one and an MRI. They're going to have to do something else to put a dye in there. That's in 10 days. And then I'm done with needles for a while, I think. And then I just do the radiation, and then they'll test my blood after all this is done and see where we stand and what's going on with that. So that's the general plan of what's about ready to happen with me. I don't anticipate not being here for the show. I may look a little more tired on the radio, but you know, you know, what else is new? And so we're just going to deal with it the best we can. But again, I'm grateful that we got this early, and we're going to deal with this. And I cannot stress enough to you, my fellow caregivers, if you're not getting a regular physical, if you're not seeing your doctor regularly about these sort of things and getting these screening things, then, you know, help me understand why. Where's the math in this? That's just good stewardship of us as a caregiver to stay strong and healthy, because healthy caregivers do indeed make better caregivers. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is Hope for the Caregiver. We'll be right back.
Here's Rob West of Faith and Finance, heard here daily on American Family Radio.
We understand how important it is for Christians to leave a legacy that will impact generations to come. One way you can do that is through a charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation. A charitable gift annuity benefits the culture-transforming work of the American Family Association. It helps ensure American Family Association is here boldly standing for biblical principles well into the future. And the charitable gift annuity allows you to shore up permanent income for life. Reach out to Riley Wildman and the team at the AFA Foundation today to see if a charitable gift annuity is right for you. Call 800-326-4543, extension 345. That's 800-326-4543, extension 345. Or visit them online at afafoundation.net.
This is the Lost in Translation Ministry Minute. Here now is your host, Dr. Baruch Korman.
I strongly believe that there's people who are listening to us today, and God wants to get their attention. God wants to tell them that their life is not pleasing to Him. It's not in line with the Word of God. And God will tear, He will destroy, He will do things. And it's not because He doesn't like those people. He loves them. But He wants them to repent and turn to Him and embrace His truth. And that's really what our entire work, what Lost in Translation is about, what Love Israel is about, is getting people to stop, to think about God and seek Him according to His Word.
Learn more about the teaching ministry of Dr. Baruch Korman at loveisrael.org. You'll find videos on almost any biblical topic on his YouTube page and on the My Bible Study app. That's loveisrael.org.
Back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger. Glad to be with you. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. If you want some more information about what we do, why we do it, how we do it, who we're doing it for, all the pertinent information is at HopeForTheCaregiver.com. I delegated out some help this week. We had a lot of rain, and which I'm very grateful for. I mean, because we had a very dry winter. And we're hoping we're going to have a very, very rainy June. And my grass is growing pretty significantly in the backyard. Now, let me explain to you our setup here. We're in an old cabin. Half of our cabin, there are two presidents who've had two non-consecutive terms, okay? And the new part of our cabin was built during Trump's second non-consecutive term. But the original part of the cabin was built during Grover Cleveland's second non-conservative. I'm not kidding. It's that old. And my father-in-law, when he first got this property out here, he built onto it. We call it a Montana telescope house. And he built on it a couple times. And so it's a little bit old. The old part of it is it needs a lot of work. And we're going to be doing that over time. But I needed to get a place that I could take care of Gracie. And we're backed up to the pasture. Now, we're up 6,000 feet. We're up here in the mountains. And when I say backyard, it's not like suburban backyard, okay? You need to understand, it's not like a nice little neighborhood. I mean, I'm out in the country here. And it was just getting overgrown. And Gracie said, you know, you might want to weed eat back there. Well, it kept raining. And I couldn't get back there. So I solicited some help. And I cordoned off a big part of the backyard. And I put some horses back there. It's not a big backyard, but there's a lot of grass. And I put them back there, and I said, have at it, boys. And actually, one of them was a girl. And I knew that if they got out, they wouldn't go anywhere because the others are right on the other side of the fence from them. And they like to all stay together, and they're contained. And they're sitting there looking at each other. And they really want to get in the backyard, too, because I have really high grass. The pasture they've been eating on. But in my backyard, they have it. And I have, I looked out there, like within 20 minutes, I could start seeing a noticeable difference. And I thought, okay, I ain't proud, y'all. I ain't proud. I'll put horses in the backyard and let them start eating it. And darn if they're not. So that organic mowing is, and that's part of being a caregiver, is knowing how to delegate help. I did actually call up a friend and they have goats and sheep. And I would have, I said, do y'all lease goats? And can you let me have one? And I, you know, have it back. And we're going to try to put a, Grayson's going to help me. Our youngest son that lives out here, he's going to try to help me put up a, I have the fencing for it, but I just have to actually do it and put it up so I can have a pen and keep them all contained in the backyard and let the goats just knock it out. And cause they'll eat the weeds, they'll eat everything. And just, you know, they'll have this place looking like, you know, Augusta National. You know, they'll just chew it all down. And for that, I'm grateful. And so I'm going to let them do it. But I ain't too proud to enlist the help of livestock. And our grandchildren are going to be coming out here next month. And I told Gracie, I said, well, it'd be kind of fun if we had a pen out here for the goats and they can talk to the goats and so forth. And so we're going to try to do that, and that'll be fun. So I just let you know that that's Montana life for me, and they're doing a fine job. They're just doing a fine job, and I'm thanking them immensely. And poor old Rocket, he's lame. He's got a bad knee, and so if he gets out, he's not going anywhere. And Sierra, she's a little bit older, and I'm not worried about her foundering because she's been, you know, she's kind of been fat for a long time. And so, and the other ones, I am worried about them foundering. So I don't let them get in with this rich grass. And they're all on the other side of the fence saying, you know, hey, what about us? You know, and I'm not all that motivated to bring them all in here because they'll tear up everything. But they would get it mowed down pretty quick. But I think Rocket and Sierra are doing a fine job. And I'll keep you posted on my potential for getting some goats and maybe a sheep or two out here and see what we could do to really avoid me having to get out there and mow. And it, you know, modern problems require modern solutions. And I don't mind mowing. I mean, you know, but the, well, here's another problem. So I have a riding mower. It's an old one. It's about 20 years old. Well, here's what I do. Every year at the end of mowing season, which is usually the end of September, 1st of October, I put it in the back of the barn, and then we bring a bunch of hay in, put it in front of that, and I keep it out of the way. And then as I feed the horses during the wintertime, the hay's all gone, and then there's my mower, and I drive it right back out again. Well, we didn't have a hard winter this year, so we've got a lot of extra hay. So my mower is buried way behind a bunch of hay, so I'm not going to be able to get it out. So I'm having to kind of use alternative mowing solutions. And I thought, well, you know, let's see how they do. And yes, I may have a couple of piles of things that I may have to dodge if I go in the backyard, but that's just Montana life. I have my muck boots that I keep right by the door, and I just slip those on and go out there and do stuff. I don't mind living on a farm. I got to tell you, I don't mind it at all. Ranch life is fun, and it's enjoyable, and I love being around animals. It's good for me mentally, just to be around the animals and do that. So anyway, that's something I thought you guys might find interesting, that I'm delegating out help. I was talking to a guy the other day, and he's been going through a pretty rough patch, and his wife is now, it appears that we're at the end, and hospice has been called in. And but he said something that when I talked to him, he said, well, the situation has certainly not improved, and the circumstances hadn't changed, but hospice was there. People were helping, and there was no crisis. There was no ringing of phones. Things had kind of settled down because there was a path there. And I said, how are you doing? He said, well, I'm sitting down and resting. I'm sitting down and resting. I haven't done that in a while. Any of y'all understand that? You know, that what it means to rest, to sit down and just be still. I think any of us who've cared for someone knows what it's like to have this constant vigilance that we do. And he's not having to do that for a while. Even when I was in the hospital with Gracie last year for 5 months, I understood that. And this time, by the way, this time last year, we were still in the hospital. And I understood that because she had 24/7 care. She was across the street in the hospital. And so I could turn off that vigilant switch with me. I didn't have to be 100% on duty all the time. It's a surreal feeling particularly when you've been doing it for 4 decades. And I remember when they discharged us, And they sent me home with her, and I had to drive all the way back to Montana. We didn't fly because she had a lot of things going on. And I, all of a sudden, it all hit me as I put her in the truck and we're getting ready to head out. And I got the picture of it, and you could just see my shoulders starting to sink a little bit, because she was going home with three drains, a catheter, oxygen, no legs, you know, after being in hospital for 5 months. It was a bit of a, even for me, America's caregiver, it was a bit of a challenge. And assuming that again, after being off for 5 months, when I didn't have the acute part of it, I was there every day with her in the hospital, but I didn't have the acute responsibility of being vigilant. And so I kind of tried to imagine where this guy was, that he said, I'm resting. I haven't done that in a while. And, you know, offhandedly, I just said, you know, you can have a picnic in the valley of the shadow of death. You can do that. And the words kind of surprised both of us. And the more I thought about it, the more appropriate it seemed, because, and I wasn't trying to be profound or anything. It just kind of occurred to me. You know, most of us that read Psalm 23, we imagine the valley is a short stretch of road. Okay, we're going to go through the valley of the shadow of death. It's only a couple hundred yards, but we're not going to fear any evil, for thou art with me. But it's just a couple hundred yards. But some valleys aren't short, are they? Some of them stretch beyond the horizon. You know, most people can endure a crisis for a season. You know, most of us can do something like this for 2 or 3 months, stand on our head or something. But we can't sustain that pace for years. And yet many of our burdens as caregivers last far longer than we expect. Chronic illness, grief, disability, loneliness, and countless other hardships often remain long after we've exhausted our plans for escaping them. You know, Scripture never promised that God's going to remove every frightening, uncomfortable, or painful circumstance just because we don't like it. In fact, when Israel found itself exiled in Babylon, God instructed his people to build houses, plant gardens, raise family, and seek the welfare of the city where they lived. Why? Because they're going to be there for a while. God wasn't abandoning his people. That's what Jeremiah 29:11 says. He says, I know the plans I have for you, but if you look at the context of it, he said, you're going to stay there for a while. Y'all just be still. Get busy living. He was teaching them how to live faithfully in a place they didn't want to be. Before promising a future and a hope, he told them to unpack and get settled in. They're going to be there for a while. And that truth has been increasingly meaningful to me. And, you know, for years, I just kept waiting for life to settle down after the next surgery, after the next hospitalization, after the next crisis. And eventually I realized I was waiting for a train that wasn't coming. More than 40 years later, the valley stretches farther than I ever imagined. But yet so does God's faithfulness. That's why the one verse in Psalm 23 has taken on fresh meaning for me. Look at here. He says, you prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Notice what David doesn't say. He doesn't say the enemies disappear. He doesn't say God waits for everything to settle down. He said, you do it in front of my enemies. The shepherd doesn't always lead us around the valley, but he always feeds us in it. He's always with us in it. None of the things that he has done in that regards has removed the burden, but all of them reminded me that I wasn't carrying it alone. And I thought about that friend of mine. He sat quietly at his kitchen table. It occurred to me that nothing about his circumstance had changed. His wife was still dying. Hospice was still there. The sorrow remained, but he was resting. The table was there. And that's why I think the image of a picnic fits. A picnic in the valley of the shadow of death is not denial. It doesn't minimize the grief or pretend the suffering isn't real. It simply recognizes that even in the darkest place, the shepherd remains present. And if the valley stretches on beyond the horizon, we might as well stop occasionally and enjoy the picnic. Not because the valley is pleasant, but because the shepherd is present. Even there, especially there, he's already set the table. If you want to see that article, I wrote that, and it's out at my Substack, caregiver.substack.com. And you can get that right now. Go out there to caregiver.substack.com, and I have that and so many other things that are available for you as a caregiver. Caregiver.substack.com. www.lovesisrael.com. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is America's Caregiver. I'm grateful to be with you. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. We'll be right back.
If we do all of those other things, but the gospel is not being proclaimed, we will continue to see the erosion of our nation from the inside. Religion informs politics. Politics touches every aspect of our lives. And as the scripture discusses that the Lord has made his people to be living epistles, what story are we a part of?
Join Abraham Hamilton III on the Hamilton Corner, weekdays at 5 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Jerusalem, oh Jerusalem, how many times I would have taken you under my wings. They had everything that was necessary for them to know Jesus and follow him, and they went their way.
I think for nations, for individuals, there is a day that you have to make the decision to respond to the Lord, and it might be that the door of opportunity after that shuts.
Exploring the Word, weekdays, 3 p.m. Central on AFR.
Once upon a time, news of what was happening around the country relied on riders on horseback or stagecoach runs to get from town to town. Needless to say, breaking news was more like slowly melting news. The telegraph helped speed up the spread of information, but not every town had a telegraph office, so it was time to saddle up the horses again. Today, we have instant access to lots of different stories about the same issue or event. But many news outlets have learned how to twist the news to fit their narrative and control public thoughts and opinions. American Family News is different. You still get up-to-the-minute information on the news from home and abroad, but we report the facts from a Christian perspective. You get to make up your own mind and form your own opinions. Why not join the growing number of people who trust American Family News for timely, accurate information? Visit AFN.net today. AFN.net.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver here on American Family Radio. This is Peter Rosenberger. Glad to be with you. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. I mentioned in the last program my Substack. Do you know what a Substack is? It's an online newsletter where I put video, audio, print, all kinds of stuff, and I just put it all out there, and you subscribe to it. It doesn't cost you anything to subscribe. You just put your email in. There are some paid things that you can unlock if you choose to do that, and that I put things behind the scenes stuff, things I talk about that I don't necessarily talk about necessarily here on the program. There are all kinds of things out there that I'd love for you to take advantage of. It's all, you know, caregiver related, but I have a chance to unpack certain things. Long form interviews that I do. There's a video interview that I did last week that you heard with Melena Cunningham, for example. Well, the video of that is out there on Substack. So that's where I put all those things. It's just an easier way to distribute it. And I hope you'll take advantage of it. And then I write quite a bit, and I put virtually everything, unless it's an exclusive with a publication that I write for it, I put this out on Substack as well. So you can, and it'll notify you. You could have the app on your phone, or you can, you know, it'll get an email and say, okay, this is out. So you take advantage of that. And then my podcast, all these episodes I do on this program, and then some are out of my podcast as well. So I hope you'll take advantage of all these things that I'm putting out there. I've got an article that's out this week that came out, and look, I had a guy that got upset with me, and he reached out to me. We had a real nice conversation because he said, you know, I listened to your program, and sometimes you go political and it always goes one way. And I was like, well, look, tell me something you like that the Democrats are doing, and we'll talk about that. Well, an idea that they have that's good for the country, you know, something that you like. And I said, I'm not here to carry water for the Republicans, but right now we got one party that's pretty hostile to objective reality. And this, I wrote about this, and you see this out there, because I was at the doctor's office, and at the top of the form, it says, what sex do you identify as? And then the next question, and this is before the medical history. And then the next question was, what gender were you assigned at birth? And I thought, I'm here for prostate cancer. It don't care what gender I think I am. We've already established that. That's reality. And so I asked this guy, I said, which party do you think has aligned itself with this kind of stuff? We're in the middle of Pride Month right now. And I just reject the term Pride Month. Forget all the debauchery that goes with it. Just the concept of pride. That's why Satan was kicked out of heaven, because of his arrogance and his pride. And here we are celebrating this as a country. I mean, good gracious. So there's only one party that really aligns itself with this whole thing of putting these kinds of things on our medical forms. That I was in my lane. Because he said, you know, you need to stay in your lane. But I was in my lane. They came into my lane. What do you do when somebody comes in your lane? Well, you honk the horn at them. And so I look at these things going on, and I deal with the world of reality. I mean, for us as caregivers, we have to live in reality. You know, we don't get to make up stuff. I mean, I'm in the exam room here. I'm not having a fantasy conversation about stuff. I need to hear facts. And the fact is, I'm a dude, and dudes don't go to the gynecologist. You know, that's just the way it works. And take it up with the one who made us. But that's, you know, so I wrote about that, and then I've got another article out this week, and I talk about, it's called Only a Flesh Wound, and there's an old movie, Monty Python and the Search for the Holy Grail. 50 years later, people still quote it. And one of my favorite scenes in it involves the Black Knight. And King Arthur encounters him. He's guarding a bridge, and a duel ensues. And the fight goes poorly for the knight. Arthur lops off one arm, and then he lops off another. And the knight's still fighting him, and he's trying to kick him. He doesn't have any arms. He's trying to kick King Arthur. And then Arthur ends up cutting off both legs as well. And so he's just a torso lying there in the dirt. And the Black Knight he surveys the situation and announces, all right, we'll call it a draw. And while he's fighting them, though, he's missing his arms. It was just a flesh wound. It's just a flesh wound. And the older I get, the more convinced I become that so much of human behavior can be explained by just that one scene. Have you ever noticed that we human beings have a remarkable ability to continue arguing with reality long after reality has settled the matter? And, you know, which of us hadn't said to someone in an absurd situation, well, it's only a flesh wound. And the thought of this crossed my mind recently because I was reading some of these statements coming out of Iran. And whatever you think about the conflict itself in Iran, I mean, and they can't get a nuclear weapon because you know good and well they're going to use it if they had one. But there's something about what's coming out of them is very Monty Python-esque. The leaders are standing amid rubble and they're declaring victory. And at a certain point, the rhetoric that they're doing begins to sound less like confidence and more like it's the Black Knight insisting that he still has a chance. You know, all right, we'll call it a draw kind of thing. But Iran doesn't have the market on that kind of reality rejection. Did you see recently with Jill Biden just this week and last? She said she was watching the debate and she said she was afraid that her husband was having a stroke during the presidential debate that exposed that he had really checked out mentally. And she described being frightened as she watched him struggle on stage, thought that he was experiencing a stroke or some other kind of medical emergency. I think she said that somebody possibly had drugged him. She's saying this. Now, I want you to understand something. I've been a caregiver for a long time. And evidently, I'm apparently behind the times. Because for 40 years of my experience in the medical world, and I've worked with hundreds of doctors and nurses in 13 different hospitals inpatient, and I foolishly assumed that if one suspects that your spouse is having a stroke, that the next step involves medical attention. Well, evidently, how foolish of me, because it turns out the correct protocol includes chance of 4 more years. Right after the debate at a rally, followed by a late night visit to the Waffle House, because that's exactly what she did. And now she's saying she thought he was having a stroke, and she's at the rally afterwards chanting, leading the chant with everybody, screaming it out, 4 more years, and then she takes him to the Waffle House. And if that's the way you're supposed to treat a stroke now, evidently medical science has made huge strides. It was clear, however, that someone's Waffle House hash browns were scattered and smothered. We're going to find out if they were covered as well. As the Black Knight would say, it's only a flesh wound. You know, like Jill Biden, I'm not a licensed physician, but watching her reminded me that I know enough to recognize when someone is in dire need of a cranial proctologist, because that was ridiculous. And I laugh at the Black Knight. I sigh at Iran, and I look with exasperation at Jill Biden. I've been saying this for years. I wrote about this long before everyone else did, that she's the one that's, I did that in the American Spectator and the Washington Examiner, because as a caregiver, that is wrong what she perpetrated. She knew it. She did it. Those of you who are spouses as caregivers, you know if there's something going on with your spouse. And to keep pushing them out on stage is no different than when Colonel Parker did to Elvis and drugged him up and sent him out on stage to the point where he has a heart attack and dies at 42. Look at Michael Jackson. Look at, go through the list. And I have maintained that she has been the culprit of this all along. She could have stopped this at any point with him. And then that reporter who let her say this without any pushback, they just let her say it. But as I look at that also, I have to admit that defiance in the face of reality isn't limited to them. Sometimes it appears in my own bathroom mirror, and I have to deal with it myself. In fact, the absurdity of these public examples just reveals a common problem in the human condition. Most of us have our version of the same speech. We insist that exhaustion, it's not that bad. The debt is manageable. The resentment is justified. The addiction is under control. The diagnosis is wrong. We're fine. I deal with fellow caregivers every day who insist that things are fine while they're struggling under impossible tasks. You could see it. I could see it. You could see it. We say it ourselves. And like Jill Biden and Iran, we also twist ourselves into pretzels defending a position that reality abandoned a long time ago. Now, we mock them, but are we prepared to admit that we often travel the same road, not quite as far down as they are, but it's the same road? You know, think about something so simple as the Serenity Prayer. It asks for the wisdom to know the difference between what can be changed and what can't. But if we're honest, I think most of us would prefer a different option. We want to negotiate with reality, at least as, okay, we'll call it a draw, like the Black Knight did. But sooner or later, reality is going to put the verdict on the table. The question is, are we going to acknowledge it? The Black Knight never did. That's what made it funny. We laughed at it. Iran and Jill Biden seem intent on going that same path into absurdity. And so we laugh at that, and we deride Iran, we deride Jill Biden for that. But maybe, just maybe, we can occasionally stop laughing long enough to see ourselves in this. Reality does have a way of reminding us that some of the things that we carry are more than just a flesh wound, that we do really have burdens. And part of the healing process for us as a caregiver is to recognize reality and stop being defiant in it. Ask for help. Say, I'm struggling. I'm not fine. Can you imagine the difference if Jill Biden had cared enough about her husband and this country to go to the stage and take the white towel and say, we're done. I love this man too much to let him continue this way. I'd have had a lot of respect for her if she'd done that. And I think you would too, because that's a caring wife. Edith Wilson didn't do that for Woodrow Wilson. And I can go through the list of others who didn't do that. And now she takes her place in history as the enabling first lady who, for her own selfish reasons, did not love her husband enough to say, we're done. Honey, you've served your time. Let's go home. Let's go home. It's time. What a powerful demonstration of what self-centeredness looks like, when selflessness would have not only been there for a marriage, but for a nation. This is Peter Rosenberger. This is Hope for the Caregiver. We'll be right back. I'll never forget walking into the hospital room after Gracie had her second amputation. Both legs are gone now. And she looked at me. She said, "I know what I'm going to do." And I was kind of startled. I said, "Well, what are you going to do?" She said, "I'm going to help provide prosthetic limbs to my fellow amputees and tell them about Jesus." And I said, "Well, baby, can we get out of the hospital first?" But she never let it go. And for almost 20 years, we've been working out of Ghana, West Africa. We treat patients all over there from other countries that come there. We send supplies. We send teams. We sponsor patients. We work with a prison where inmates volunteer to disassemble used prosthetic limbs so we can recycle the parts. All of this because Gracie trusted God with her heartache. We've got a huge shipment of supplies that is being loaded up right now to go out soon. Would you help us do it? StandingWithHope.com/giving. StandingWithHope.com/giving. There's prosthetic feet, knees, pylons, sleeves, adapters, all kinds of connectors. All of these things we are sending over there so that people can walk. We're going to point them to Christ. Help us out. StandingWithHope.com/giving.
Your Caregiver Minute with Peter Rosenberger.
I have talked to so many people in desperate situations. And in order to offer any assistance in that, there has to be clarity. Clarity of thought. Concise, to the point where they have direction. She may not make it, but you have to. That's clarity. And I say to you, my fellow caregivers, that your loved one may be in desperate straits. If so, I hurt with you. I get that. I truly get it. But you are no good to them if you collapse. You are no good to them if you're broke. You are no good to them if you're a train wreck emotionally and physically and spiritually. They may not make it, but you have to. You have to. That is not selfish. That's clarity. But now what is making it look like you turning into this, shaking hands with it and recognizing God is still sovereign in this? He's not abandoning you. This is hard, but it doesn't have to defeat you. Can you hang on to that?
Hope for the Caregiver with Peter Rosenberger. Saturday mornings at 8 Eastern, 7 Central on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to Hope for the Caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger, and this is the program for you as a family caregiver. We're so glad to be with you today on this journey into all things caregiver related, and I hope you have found things to be meaningful and helpful to you, which brings me to a point. I have a lot of stuff out there online, and I'm encouraging you to take advantage of it. We used to do blogs. I don't really do a blog anymore. I do everything at Substack. Substack is where I keep all of my writings and videos and so forth. And then I have a podcast that I do this show and other things, other long-form interviews, and I'll do all those as well on Substack. Caregiver.substack.com, S-U-B-S-T-A-C-K, Substack.com, caregiver.substack.com. And I put it out there just as an organized way. You can subscribe to it. You don't have to pay anything. There are several things that are behind a paywall, and I would welcome the support of what I'm trying to do with this. It's not very much. It's like $5. I don't know how much you pay for a cup of coffee every month, but I'd like to think I could at least match the value of a cup of coffee per month on what I'm offering to my fellow caregivers of things that I've learned for 40 years. Would you take advantage of it? Caregiver.substack.com. My podcast is out there. That's free. And I put out this show and other things, other interviews that I do. And then if I do videos, that's at the Substack as well, because my podcast doesn't allow, like I can't post video to Spotify, for example. I can to YouTube, but it doesn't allow me to do that on my podcast. So I put all that at my Substack. And then what happens is you just get an email or a push notice from the app of Substack and said, "Hey, look, Peter's got a new article out there. Peter's got this out there new," and just all kinds of things that I put out there. And you can contact me through that. There's just so much I'm putting out there to help my fellow caregivers. And I feel an urgency to do so because I see how difficult this is. And I'm serious about it. I'm serious about offering what I've learned because I feel like I have a stewardship responsibility. And I hope that you feel the same way as you're learning things together with me, that both of us now can go out and talk to more people and be able to go into very painful situations and share the hope of Christ in a way that's meaningful to people in those things. That's the whole point of all this. I'm just one beggar showing the other beggars where the bread is. And that's what we do. All right. So caregiver.substack.com. Today's hymn that every caregiver ought to know, for those who've just now joined the program, we've been doing a series on hymns that every caregiver ought to know. And I just go through these hymns periodically. Sometimes producer Pat thought at one time, she said, well, that's just a chorus. I said, well, it's a hymn to me. So I find songs that I have sung, played, Gracie has sung in some of the darkest places of our life. And we've had some pretty dark ones. And these songs have stood out. And this one was written by a guy named Frederick Whitfield, born in England, 1829. And he was an Anglican minister for most of his life. He was much of his life, not most of it, but he was educated at Trinity College in Dublin and spent decades in Paris ministry. And he wrote around 30 hymns, but he's remembered basically for just one. And that's this one. He was not known as a great theologian. I'm not saying that he wasn't. I mean, he just wasn't known for that. But he was a pastor, and he faithfully served people who are going through their struggles in life, just like you and I are. And this hymn that he wrote in 1855 focused on the name of Jesus. And it's a very simple tune. It was an American folk tune that was put on it, but he wrote the text. I don't think he put it with the tune. That's usually the way it works. A lot of times these guys will write a great text, and then they'll have a tune. So let's go over here to the caregiver keyboard. I feel like Mr. Rogers when I do that. Let's go to the town of make-believe, you know, and get the little train going, you know. But by the way, the guy that played the piano for him was just an amazing jazz pianist. And Mr. Rogers was no slouch at it either. He was pretty good at what he did, too. So anyway, back to the caregiver keyboard. This hymn, I'm going to lower this down in the key of D because I'm a little froggy today. There is a name I'd love to hear. I'd love to sing its worth. It sounds like music in my ears. The sweetest name on earth. Now you know this song. Oh, how I loved Jesus. Oh, how I loved Jesus. Oh, how I loved Jesus. Because he first loved me. And then here's the fourth verse. It tells of one whose loving heart can feel my deepest woes, in who each sorrow bears a part that none can bear below. So, you know, it's so consistent with Scripture. He's a man of sorrow, acquainted with grief. He comes into our sorrow. He does these things, and he feels this. He knows this. He knows what's going on. He's not looking at this from afar. He entered this. And then that's when you break out in this chorus. Oh, how I love Jesus. Oh, how I love Jesus. Oh, how I love Jesus. Because he first loved me. those of you who are pianists or guitarists, for those who don't like me doing the music theory, I'm sorry. I do this because I love to throw in better chords, and I'm trying to learn better chords to play. And then you throw in like a diminished chord. Oh, Jesus. And that's a flat 7. Oh, how I love Jesus. Because he first Now, can't you see yourself singing this around the house? Just humming it. Because he first loved me. And what do we, let me go back over here to the main mic and leave the caregiver keyboard. I may come back to it. I have two mics in here, so I go back and forth. But the principle of this is, look, because he first loved me. Now think about what are we saying there? That you figured this out? That, you know, I love him because I figured this out, and I called on him and said, Lord, I got an idea. How about if I come to you? Is that how it works? Is that what he says? No man comes to the Father except that the Spirit draws him. The Father draws him. And Scripture says, no one seeks after God. Not anyone. Nobody's doing this. And Paul quoted that again. That's from the Old Testament. Paul quoted again. No one's doing this. No one seeks after righteousness. No one's doing this. But his Spirit pursued you. It made us willing to be willing, if you will. And that's what happens. While we were yet enemies, he did this for us. We didn't love him. We were not seeking after him in our sin. And he came to us. Oh, how I love Jesus. Now, what does that mean for us as a caregiver? He first loved you. He knew you first. You're not crying out to him in distress as a caregiver, and that's the first time y'all having an encounter. Okay? He knew you. He knew me. He knew our loved one. He knew Gracie. He knows these things. We don't have a God who reacts. You ever notice this? God doesn't play defense. It's not like, you know, oh man, what happened to Peter and Gracie? You know, God's not smacking his forehead over this. That's the whole point of this. Because he first loved us, he pursued us, and he set our feet on this path, knowing that we're going to have some tough times with it. There is a name I love to hear. But that's what it says in the verse here. It tells of one whose loving heart can feel my deepest woe. Do you believe that? So I think that's a hymn that is worth us knowing as family caregivers. Oh, how I love Jesus. That's our hymn for this week. I hope you enjoyed that, and we'll press on this series and keep coming to you with more and more hymns that every caregiver ought to know. Thanks for joining me today. We are out of time. Look at the clock, and we've got to go again. HopeForTheCaregiver.com is where you'll find everything, particularly my Substack, my books, and a way to support this ministry. If you like what you're hearing on this program, you can support it. There's a donate button right there at the top. Would you click it and say, I'm encouraged by this and I want others to be able to hear it as well. HopeForTheCaregiver.com. We'll see you next time.